Yeah, it is. Yes, it is. Oh, yeah. Good morning. Welcome. I'm starting a bit early this morning because I'm concerned about time and I've been neglecting Miklos Nisley Auschwitz, a doctor's eyewitness account. Good morning. This is Sunday, May 4th, 2014. Waking up, freeing ourselves from work. And we still got the hum. I keep hoping one day we'll figure out some hum-free recording circumstances. This morning I've been pondering this question, whether if in a single block of complicit silence, the voice of the official left had not ignored Emanuel Wallerstein's argument, would all of us rising up with such courage around the world against totalitarian regimes, and as class is global, we are all living under totalitarian regimes to some degree. But I'm thinking of Egypt and Tunisia, the Ukraine and Turkey. If we had been discussing it, would it not have enabled us to get clear, get focused, and so figure out how to unify our efforts? And they can't say they didn't know about it, because I stressed it in the opening of Waking Up. And I sent enough of these copies out, and I sent enough of these pundits copies of the book, and only to those who said they wanted to look at it. I sent to enough to provoke some notice and hopefully discussion of it. It was quite clear to me when I heard it, Wallerstein's argument, that for we on the left and we the people generally, there's nothing else to talk about at this juncture because the ideology of capitalism has so captured dissent, so derailed it, that discussing it would finally get us focused on claiming the future, which is how we get free. I mean, that's enormously encouraging to me. That it really is hearing that message, that we can get free by claiming the future. We simply have to want it. And getting those discussions going then means everything. What's coming up for me, as you're gonna hear in this show, is the need for we the people to move quickly, and I'm talking globally, to drive this global awakening home. During last week's show, Miklos taught us something important, and it will be emphasized in this show, that power wastes no time trying to erase from our minds and bodies the recollection of the feeling of its, the state's, repeated betrayals. We referred to something said in a recent book, The People's State of Amnesia, that Chinese youth are not being told the truth about Tiananmen Square. And yesterday, this was the 28th, I heard another example from a woman who's written a book about the Ludlow massacre of families in coal country on strike. They played the chilling Woody Guthrie chronicle of it, and Woody is another powerful witness for the people. And she said that now, many decades later, local folks had this vague sense that Indians had done it. And we know who told them that. It sure wasn't Woody. How come that wasn't played every week to folks who'd been living through that history? And for all of us, winners write the history. This we know. Popper most eloquently told us so. Deep pockets purchase many media outlets and seem to plant their skewed and false reality too deep for honest souls to reach, unearth and purify in fire's light. Except our will preserved, kept sound sealed tight, as did our Emily. Essential words for hanging on to sanity. With powers lies a tempest swirling round our minds. Steady. Stay your eyes in their cool pools of rich simplicity that tell us truth is truth until the end of reckoning. We must move apace. We see how only in a matter of days they've almost rewritten the story of the 2014 Ukrainian revolution. But I don't have a word to describe the remake they've done on Putin. Okay, let's don't go there. I'll derail my show here. I mean, come on. A living sociopath on the scale of, well, maybe not Hitler or Stalin, but I mean, he's rivaling them, right? He's right up there. I mean, he's been massaged in the media into being some sort of victim. I mean, it's just bizarre. Anyway, move on. It's too obvious what history is going to say about this moment if we allow power to continue beyond our day, beyond this generation of uncommon activism. And by the way, thank you, Turkey, for your courage on May Day. I mean, we don't get to hear much about much of what's going on elsewhere. So when we hear that there's thousands in the street, trust, there's quite a few thousands in the street, and they braved a lot of violence, a lot of threat to do it. Uncommon activism. Which is why it's so alarming to me to hear Wallerstein talk about the struggle for the replacement system taking some, he said, 30 or 40 years or so. In 40 years, we've lost the oceans, to say nothing of the devastated lives of our brothers and sisters. That's completely unacceptable. It almost feels like an abdication of responsibility, such words from him. Perhaps on this he will engage discussion. So today, we are going to be reading together an excerpt from Emmanuel Wallerstein's chapter in the book, Does Capitalism Have a Future? This is the title of his chapter, Structural Crisis or Why Capitalists May No Longer Find Capitalism Rewarding. And as we read this, we need to ask ourselves these questions, I think. Who should determine the future? And given what Wallerstein is saying, how much sense does a demand for more jobs make? I mean, this is all we hear from the official left. And I challenge you, after our discussion today, to put your paycheck at risk and go beyond that analysis. Because this is bigger than your particular reward or survival or recognition or whatever it is they give you to say what will get remunerated. We're talking about the life of the oceans, the existence of hope for a full existence for all of us. So if discussing whether you have to have a degraded class for anything to happen. If that's your barrier, get on it, talk about it. Put it out there for the communal mind to ponder, to think on, until you can get clear that no, it isn't. That's the problem, that's the barrier, that's brought this mess. We have to move beyond it.